Jason, that was really good. Thank you. So I thought going second would be easier, right? But if you listen and you get engaged in it, you kind of lose your thoughts on your lesson on what you're going to do. So he's probably at least 20 years younger than me. Computer, you know, all that stuff. Me, notebook, Bible, no PowerPoint, sorry. Just, we'll do this old school. I just want, this isn't so much of a scripted sermon or anything like that. I just want to share with you some thoughts that I've been kicking around in my journal. I don't know that I've figured it out yet. It's a journey, right, that we're all on. I just want to share some thoughts with you that hopefully will be beneficial to you. To do that, let's turn over. I'm going to look at several passages. I would ask that you'd follow along because context is important, and I don't have time to go through all the context here. Most of you will kind of know the context that it sits in, but look at the verses. Mark 10, 17, 21, talking there about the young man who had a lot and asked God, Jesus, a question about what he needed to do to be saved. I want to read this one, and we'll come back to it towards the end of the few minutes that I have to speak with you. Mark 10, there in 17, it says, And he, that being Jesus, was setting out on a journey. A man ran up to him and knelt before him and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one is good except God alone. You know the commandments. Do not murder. Do not commit adultery. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not fraud. Honor your father and mother." And he said to him, "Teacher, I have kept all of these things from my youth up." Looking at him, Jesus felt love for him and said to him, "One thing you lack. Go and sell all you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me." But at these words, he was saddened and went away grieving, for he was one who owned much property. So I'm sure that each of you have heard multiple sermons on that, and there's a lot of really good points in there. I want to look at one. One thing you lack. Have you ever asked God on your knees in humility to show you the one thing that you lack? To me, that is a terrifying question. And I want to talk to you about it. I want to share my terror with you and hopefully give you something to make it not quite so frightening. My lesson tonight is for those of you that are a little bit more mature in your faith. I want to go a little deeper, or at least as deep as I'm capable of going in a clear way. That doesn't mean those of you who aren't as mature, you get a free pass. There's something in here for all of us. But I want to try to dig a little bit on this. And to do that, I need you to take a moment and I need you to identify your one thing. I don't want to know what it is. I don't want you to blurt it out. Maybe when I read this, something jumped in your mind. If you don't know what your one thing is, I would suggest that you think about what is it that you're continually asking God to forgive you for over and over and over again, or what is the situation that you want to avoid, or what is it that makes you nervous, or what is that one thing that you hope you never have to face. Once you've got it, we'll move on. What is your one thing? Now, if, and this is a very big if for me, if I've only got one thing, I don't think I just have one. I think that it's like an onion. There's multiple. But if I had only one thing, how am I going to deal with it? What am I going to do when Jesus says, "This one thing, David, you lack"? And I think the answer to that is my ability to move from faith in God to trust in God. Let me give you an example. So if the Walensia, I'm a business guy, right? I deal with business. So you know at some point I had to throw a business example in here. So if the Walendas came up to me, they're the ones who do the tightrope thing, and he's actually walked across in 2012, walked across the Niagara Falls on a tightrope. Took him 25 minutes to do it. If he came up to me and say, I want you to invest in me to walk across the Niagara Falls in a wheelbarrow, and I want you to buy stock in my company to do that, and I think that you can make a 100-fold return. And I have faith that he has the ability to do that because I've seen him do it before. And he says, I'll even, you know, show you a clip of where I've already done this once. I did it in secret. Nobody knows about it. But I think we can make a lot of money doing this. And I have faith in his ability to do that based upon evidence that I've seen of him. And right? That's faith. And he says, and so that we can really make some money on this, I want you to get in the wheelbarrow. That's trust. The difference in me investing in it is faith. Me getting in the wheelbarrow is trust. So how do I move from faith in God to trust in God? I think that's the key. So let's look at a few passages. And I'm sorry if this isn't that well put together, but maybe this is, you see a picture of how my mind works. Let's look at Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24. There Jesus says, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and riches. So for the sake of this one thing, let's just say that it's riches. And that example with that young man, it was riches. He had a lot of money, right? In this example, you cannot serve God and wealth. But I want you to use for your example, if your example is your intellect, in how people view you and how you look, whatever it is, your health, just replace God and your one thing for this. It's one thing for me to recognize that it's wrong for me to serve or try to serve God and my one thing. It's altogether a different thing for me to understand it is absolutely impossible for me to serve God and my one thing. It's not that I shouldn't do it. I can't do it. Jesus there says, you cannot serve God and riches. So I've got to get in my mind somehow that it's not that I can dabble around with this and serve God. I can't do both. It's an impossibility. So I don't know why I spend so much time trying to do the impossible. It's just, it's not very smart. Look at Matthew 12 and verse 30. There it says, he who is not with me is against me. He who does not gather with me scatters. That helps me understand why I can't do both. That helps me understand why it's impossible for me to do both, because either I'm with God or I'm against God. It's an either or. It's not a sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. So whenever I'm dealing with my one thing, I'm making myself an enemy of God. Look at David's viewpoint of those that were against God. In the 139th Psalm, David was a man after God's own heart, and he has several attributes. This is one that's really intriguing to me. This was David's attitude. Psalm 139, verse 21 and 22. There he says, do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord? And do I not loathe those who rise up against you? I hate them with the utmost hatred. They have become my enemies. That was David's attitude towards those that were against God. You know the first three commandments of the Ten Commandments? Don't have anything in my place. That's what God said. Don't even make anything that represents me to worship me, and don't mess with my name. Those are the three commandments that God said are the first three commandments. All about Him and His holiness and how He is to be viewed. So I look at that and I understand that, or I think I understand that, and I say, okay, that's kind of the negative reasons why not to do something, right? When I think about the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? That's where you start, but that's not where you end up. So what I just talked about is the negative. So I know I'm not supposed to do that. But I've got to be honest with you. I am hard-pressed to get from just knowing the negative of the downside of it to actually moving me to getting to give up my one thing. I need more than just the negative side of it. I need the positive. So let's talk about the positive. What is it that's going to take me to get into the wheelbarrow? What is it going to take to move me from faith to trust? In Luke chapter 9, verse 23 and 24, there Jesus says, Luke 9, 23 and 24, there he says, and he was saying to all them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake, he is the one who will save it. So at the end of that, you see the positive. There is something that I need to do to receive the positive. The first part of that verse is the negative. I have to pick up my cross and bear it daily. I have to lose my life. But there's a positive on the end of that, saving my life. In Matthew chapter 13, verses 44 through 46, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found and hid again. And from joy over it, he goes and sells all that he has to buy that field. And again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls, and upon finding one pearl of great value, he went and he sold it and he bought it. What did they give up? Gave up everything. And they didn't even hesitate to do it. They were in a hurry to give up everything that they had. Who does that? Who is willing to give up everything that they have? The person who realizes that what they're going to get in return for everything that they have is a really, really good deal. That's the only person that's in their right mind that's willing to give up everything that they have is the person who realizes that they're getting a good deal and giving up everything they have, because the treasure that they receive far exceeds everything that they have. Philippians 3 and verse 8, one of the most remarkable statements in my opinion that the Apostle Paul made. Philippians 3 and verse 8. Well, let me go back to 7. But whatever things were gained to me, those things I count as loss for the sake of Christ. More than that, I count all things to be loss in view of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and count them but rubbish, so that I might gain Christ. Paul did it because he understood the surpassing value of knowing Christ, and so that he could gain Christ. That's how he had that mindset. Now let's go back to where we started with this young man in Mark. Well, I don't know if he was young or not. This individual who had a lot of stuff in Mark chapter 10 and verse 20, there in 21. Jesus was talking to him. He said, one thing you lack, go and sell all you possess and give to the poor. Okay. He possessed a lot. And he was smart enough to ask a really good question, and he was asking the right person. So this guy wasn't an idiot. And he was living, by all means, a faithful life, right? He's a pretty impressive person. But have you ever been in a conversation with somebody where once you hear something, you don't hear anything else? I have, usually when it's an argument, right? I hear one thing, and then I'm done listening. I just don't hear anything else. I wonder if that's what he did. He heard the price, but he didn't listen to what he was going to get in return. So let's read it again. One thing you lack, go and sell all you possess and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. Let's go back to what David said right after we learn how he feels about those who hate God and who are God's enemies. In the 139th Psalm, there right after what we read in verse 23, David says an absolutely remarkable prayer. And I'm going to challenge you, as I challenge myself, for you to say this prayer. Here David says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there be any hurtful way in me, and lead me in the everlasting way." Don't pray it if you don't want to know. If you want to know, if I want to know my one thing, then I need to ask God to show me what my one thing is. I don't know how you will deal with that, but the way that I pray that I'll deal with that is that, one, I'll be humble enough and wise enough to listen to what he shows me. And I also ask him to be incredibly patient as I try to work through it, because it's going to take some time. I just know me. It's not just going to be, okay, I got it. What's my next one thing? I'm going to have to struggle with this probably. And then also that he gives me the strength and the wisdom to deal with it. So, when God shows you your one thing, I ask you to trust him enough to get in the wheelbarrow. If there's anybody here tonight that wants to pray with us to pray with you, or you want to start your journey with God, count the cost, which are great. It will cost you everything that you have. But the value that you will receive in return is far greater than anything you can possibly imagine.